You wouldn't have expected David Corton to raise any doubts about the soundness of the global economy and its ability to solve poverty and environmental damage if you knew him in the 1980s. At that time, he was on the front lines of the global economy, working for the U.S. Agency for International Development, touting the benefits of international investment in Southeast Asia. He was a Stanford-trained businessman. He served as a captain in the Air Force during the Vietnam War. He was also a Harvard professor of business. The way of the global economy made sense. Then something changed. In 1992, he wrote, "When Corporations Rule the World." His most recent book, The Great Turning, From Empire to Earth Community. In May 2006, Corton spoke to an audience at the First Congregational Church in Oakland, California, about why he thinks we're on the cusp of a major shift from a world dominated by economic values to one that embraces human values.
I find it useful to start my presentation by reviewing a bit of the personal story that informs the thoughts I'll be sharing with you. I grew up in Longview, a small conservative town in Washington State, where my family owned a music and appliance store. In that experience, I rarely saw a person of a different race. I never met a Muslim, Hindu, or Buddhist. And never in my wildest imagination did it occur to me that as an adult I would reside for 21 years outside the United States in East Africa, Central America, and Southeast Asia on a mission to end global poverty by sharing the secrets of U.S. business success. And certainly I had no idea that I would be personally encountering humanity's wondrous diversity. During the course of my experience abroad, I came to realize that far from creating universal prosperity, the economic models that drove the organizations for which I worked were producing devastating consequences for people and planet. And the reason in hindsight is quite clear. And the implications apply to us as much as they apply to the people abroad that I went out to serve. These models call for decision-making based on maximizing returns to money rather than on maximizing the well-being of people and planet. And the more deeply I examined the issues, the clearer it became that these models primarily serve the interests of global corporations and financial markets. Everything else is pretty much incidental. In 1992, Fran, my wife, and I moved from the Philippines to New York City to focus our attention on the deeper roots of the problems we'd gone abroad to resolve. And I set about to write When Corporations Rule the World. My search for a deeper understanding of the issues and their implications led to writing The Great Turning, From Empire to Earth Community. Writing this book drew me into ever deeper examination of the sweep of the human experience and of our unfolding awareness of our nature and our place in creation. And I want to share with you tonight some of the conclusions of the book, which begins with these prophetic words from the preamble to the Earth Charter. We stand at a critical moment in Earth's history, a time when humanity must choose its future. That is the defining charge of our time. For 5,000 years, the dominant human societies have organized relationships at all levels, from those among states to those among family members, by dominator hierarchy. Call it the era of empire. As I did my research for The Great Turning, I was stunned to realize that every empire in human history has been built on a foundation of slavery and bonded labor. You think about it, it is axiomatic. For a few to be on the top, the many must be on the bottom. And it remains so in our own time, with sweatshop and migrant agricultural workers being our modern equivalents. Now, since that fateful turn away from Earth Community, imperial institutions have systematically reduced the vast majority of humans to conditions of servitude that suppress their creative potential, while elevating to the highest positions of power the most power-driven and ethically challenged among us. You may recognize this in our time. Throughout history, ruling elites have limited the competition for the positions at the top by denying the very humanity of whole groups of persons based on race and gender, arbitrarily consigning them permanently to the bottom and therefore outside the realm of competition. Racism, sexism, classism, and environmental devastation are all manifestations of these dynamics of the play-or-die competition for imperial power. Now, over 5,000 years, the primary institutional forms of empire have morphed from the imperial city-states of ancient time to the imperial nation-states of the modern era, and more recently to the imperial global corporations of our time. The pattern of domination and exclusion, however, remains largely unchanged. Many people ask me, why are you so obsessed about corporations? They're just communities of people. This argument, however, misses a critical point. In a publicly traded corporation, the people, including the CEO, are all employees of the institution, with few, if any, individual rights. They're paid to serve the institution at its pleasure, required by law to leave their personal values at the door, and subject to dismissal without recourse at a moment's notice. It is the institution, not the individuals, who count. In short, this is an institution of enormous power governed by absentee owners and unaccountable managers in the business of converting the life energy of people and nature into money for the short-term financial gain of already wealthy shareholders and managers without regard to human or natural consequences. In other words, the publicly traded limited liability corporation is a gigantic pool of money with an artificial legal personality required by law to behave like a sociopath. It is our modern equivalent of unaccountable and often sociopathic kings of the past. Exclusion, deprivation, and environmental devastation are inevitable consequences of the cultures and institutions of empire, and they will remain with us so long as we allow these cultures and institutions to define our values and relationships. Environmental devastation and the gap between rich and poor are growing at an accelerating rate as owners of capital monopolize ever more of the productive capacity of the planet and workers are squeezed to provide their labor at an ever lower price. On a finite planet, sustainability and equity are inseparably interlinked. Radical and potentially devastating change is now guaranteed by the mounting forces of a perfect economic storm, born of a convergence of peak oil, climate change, and U.S. dollar meltdown. It becomes more certain by the day that this convergence is poised to bring a rapid and potentially devastating unraveling of the corporate global economy. Peak oil, of course, occurs when global oil production peaks and begins its inexorable decline as continued rising demand sends prices soaring. Oil output may have peaked last year in 2005. It may not peak until 10 years hence. The difference, however, is irrelevant. We must act immediately to eliminate our dependence on oil because the era of cheap oil is over. Now, the consequences of peak oil will be exacerbated by climate change. During the 20th century, the average surface temperature of the planet increased by 0.6 degrees Celsius. Projections of the increase anticipated by the end of the current century range from 2 degrees to 4.5 degrees Celsius. And we are already experiencing an ominous trend in weather-related natural disasters. From the decade of the 1950s to the first 5 years of the 21st century, and that is within the lifetimes of most of us in this room, the annual average of severe weather events increased from 24 per year to 350 per year. So hurricanes Rita and Katrina are but a foretaste of what lies ahead. According to a study commissioned by the U.S. Department of Defense, we can expect shorter growing seasons and a 10 to 25% global loss of crop yield. Water shortages, increase in forest fires, famine, disease, and severe weather events, and endemic resource wars and uncontrolled migration. So this is a serious business. The third element of the perfect economic storm, a meltdown of the U.S. dollar, is the consequence of a growing U.S. trade deficit that hit $750 billion in 2005 and continues growing. Growth in the trade gap is a measure of the extent to which we in the United States are living ever further beyond our own means, running up a credit card debt to the rest of the world and leaving the bill to our children. It, of course, is also a measure of the rate at which we are hemorrhaging both the family wage jobs that created the U.S. middle class and the manufacturing technology and research capabilities that go with those jobs. Now, on the day the rest of the world tires of selling on credit to an economic deadbeat, the financial house of cards that supports our profligate ways will collapse. There are three potential scenarios for our future if we choose to play out a last-man-standing competition for the remaining resources of the planet. We can anticipate some combination of escalating military conflict and possible nuclear Armageddon, and or feudal fragmentation as after the fall of the Roman Empire. There is, of course, an alternative, which is to join in common cause in a cooperative effort to bring forth a living partnership of Earth community. Now, the combination of peak oil, severe weather events, and a U.S. dollar meltdown will force a dramatic restructuring of the way we live as the economic incentives shift from global to local supply chains and from suburban sprawl to compact communities. The communities that will fare the best will be those that act now to rebuild local supply chains with particular attention to becoming substantially self-reliant in energy and food. That imperative, thus, becomes an opportunity to build functioning communities, restore a sense of place, democratize economic power, and radically revise our priorities for the use of labor, land, and other natural resources, giving priority to life values over financial values.